woke everybody up.
There we go.
So I will call the first meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. And thank you, committee members, for being here so promptly. I said to Vice Chair Berger that I think being on time for the first meeting is like being on time for the first day of school. Then nobody remembers after that what you did. So I think we've established that everybody was here promptly and ready to go. So we have a fairly brief agenda today. It's our organizational meeting, and so we will be doing adoption of rules, member introductions, and then at 8:30, we're going to be hearing from the Secretary of State, and I think that will probably fill about an hour. And then you all may have noticed that we have get a chance to see each other again this afternoon. We have our very first official bill hearing and work session at 4 o'clock for SCR1. So that will not be in this room. That will be in Hearing Room F just for today. And I see that the Secretary of State has already joined us. We actually were expecting you at 8:30, but if you can...
You can come back.
Well, you don't need to leave. We really just... we have a couple of housekeeping things to take care of. And
no
then,
problem.
So if you just make no yourself problem. Comfortable, we'll be with you shortly. Okay, so our first order of business is adoption of rules. You should have in front of you the proposed committee rules. And these are basically the boilerplate rules that have been used from time immemorial in this building. So please take a minute to look at those and see if you have any questions. Mr. Administrator, is there anything we need to point out on these rules?
I would be happy to read through them or summarize them as you wish. They are the standard rules that all the committees are adopting. They're generated, as you know, by the Chief Clerk of the House for all of the committees. I have not heard of any anything unusual in these rules. Pretty standard.
Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, rule number 14 we discussed a little bit as being something that I don't remember particularly in my other committee as being, maybe I missed it before. But I think it's a good idea. So, and I would just point out that it is not as boilerplate as I recall.
Good morning, Representative Thatcher.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And so rule number 14 is the one that requires that proposed amendments be made available to the committee administrator at least 48 hours before a work session.
If it is not
proposed by other than members of our the legislature.
Yeah, right.
Senator Berger and Chair Rosenbaum, I've done some further thinking on this. I really believe it's addressing conceptual amendments because only members can bring legislative council amendments, can order them. And so these would any amendment that comes through legislative council would be from a member. So I think this is just to help those who would make suggestions to you, make them early so that we can get them in the proper legislative council form.
Okay. And I think certainly if we get in the heat of later parts of session and an amendment hasn't technically met that, but somebody has it properly drafted, certainly we would probably entertain it. So.
Right.
Any other questions, Representative Roblin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really believe it had to do with that 48-hour notice that we're trying to stick to, and that you can have amendments that change the tone and the bill completely. And if you're getting them in less than that, it's really no notice for people who are out there to have even known that it was coming up and it would be discussed. So I think it goes along in part with what we've already talked about, making sure that people know what's happening so that they can be a part of the process. So I think it's nice for me. It was very frustrating at times when you get something that came up at the same day and you're trying to figure out what it means at the moment as opposed to having some time ahead of time to think about it. So.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Well, I guess in the spirit of continuing on the vein of more openness, and I agree with what Representative Roblin was saying, it just seems maybe inconsistent that we didn't even post on our notice that we were going to be adopting committee rules like every other notice that I saw posted did, and I just thought that it would be good to be consistent and also to make sure that we're open and that the public can weigh in on it. It would be incumbent on us to maybe spell out a little bit more what we're doing, because we agreed that we would not only list a bill number, but also a little summary of what that bill contained, which I think is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that we continue to try to include the public more. So.
Thank you for that comment. I think our organizational meeting probably assumed that we were going to adopt rules as the main order of business, but I will note that, and in the future we'll make sure that things are spelled out as clearly as they possibly can be. Any further discussion on these proposed rules? Okay, seeing none, I think a motion to adopt them would be in order. Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move adoption of the proposed rules.
Representative Buckley moves adoption of our proposed rules. Is there any discussion? We don't need to call the roll on this, right?
You don't want to ask if there's any objections.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, then these rules are adopted. And our next order of business is to have brief introductions from members of the committee. And what we had in mind was to just hear from you, who you are, obviously, and if you have any particular background or interests on the Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee, then let us know what that is. And I think we'll start with Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vicki Berger, I represent West Salem, South Salem, the communities of Monmouth and Independence, and I'm in my third term. I think everyone here knows that. My particular interest with this committee is because I spent the interim on the work group of the Oregon Law Commission on the ethics laws. It was very heavy weather, my friends. If you think we haven't had a lively discussion on our old rules, extend this discussion to cover every volunteer, local government person throughout the state, and from the largest city to the smallest burg, and have them all weigh in, because basically our ethics laws are sort of the rules that our government operates by. And so after spending the entire interim on this effort, I wanted to be as close to the table as possible to see sort of the finishing piece and be here for this committee to explain when we start getting into the series of drafts that are coming our way from this group, to say, here's sort of how we got there. Or in some cases I'll say, I don't know how we got there because it was that difficult. So that is my primary focus. And in the meantime, I was also watching the Public Commission on the Legislature, because the two efforts were sort of, there were common members and sort of common discussions. So that is why I'm very happy to be on this committee.
Great, and we're glad to have you, and we're very pleased that you're serving as one of the vice chairs. And so next, let's hear from the other vice chair, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As some of you know, I spent many months focused on the issue of campaign finance reform over the last few years, and spent countless hours in meetings with countless groups on the issue of how do we make our campaigns fair. You know, what's the process for ensuring transparency? What's the process for ensuring that Oregonians actually believe in as close to a level playing field as we can get, and that their elections are open and honest? And after that period of time of studying, negotiating, coming up with different proposals, entertaining different proposals, this committee just seemed to be the place where I had to get to in this session in order to continue those discussions and hopefully bring forth some proposals for reform to make sure that our elections are fair. I also worked with my colleague from Medford, who's sitting to my right, as he usually is.
Always.
And we focused on the rules of the House from really even before the end of last session. And Representative Eskel has my cell phone number, I think, tattooed on his hand, and he uses it quite frequently. We discuss quite often how to make the process, our own rules, fair, transparent, and how to make sure that every representative has a voice and the legislature is a voice in the process. And I've thoroughly enjoyed that work. And when I saw that Representative Escobar was going to be on this committee, too, I was very pleased, and I look forward to work, continuing that collaboration with him. But most of all, just to be here, as Representative Berger said, that there's so much momentum from the Public Commission on the Legislature and the Law Commission's work. There's momentum from groups such as League of Women Voters, the Money in Politics Action Research Group, MIPRAP, Action Money in Politics, whatever it is, MIPRA. There's a lot of momentum heading towards, I think, very positive reforms, and I'm glad to be part of it.
Great, and we're glad to have you. And Representative Escobar, since you've been mentioned, would you like to go next?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I look forward to this committee. I'm from the District 6, which is Medford, and I have the majority of Medford itself. I think I have 17 constituents outside the city limits. So it's pretty much in Medford itself. The opportunity we have here in this committee is that we're going through some changes in reevaluating ethics. And as my colleague from Ashland said, we're doing some rule writing. This is a great opportunity because this is where rubber meets the road. This is our guidelines. This is our map as we go forward. And it gives each and every one of us an opportunity to make the institution better, as well as the state capital better, and more important, the legislative process, we can make it better.
Thank you. Well, welcome to the committee, and Representative Roblin.
Thank you. Arnie Roblin from District 9, which is down in Coos Bay all the way to Florence. And for me, I bring another perspective, having been in most of my working life, 32 years in as a public employee, as a principal and teacher, the rules that set forward here carry over to all of those public employees. And there are times when I was there that some of them did not seem to have any correlation to common sense. And so it is, and to figure them out has taken more and more time at the beginning of school years to help go over all the rules with all of the people who you're working with so that they know that they're not doing something wrong inadvertently. And there are times when inadvertently doing things wrong would be pretty obvious because common sense doesn't seem to have been there. And I think that looking at the rules and making sure that they're clear and so that we can actually help people in this state understand that we have an abiding belief that we need to be open and honest and straightforward in our dealings with people. The rules that have come to put in place in schools and with volunteers, it is getting more and more complex, and it makes it harder and harder to get those people who truly want to be a part of making Oregon and our schools and other things a better place, harder and harder for them to realize that they're going to sign on that little dotted line all these things that they have to remember. And, you know, if we can, as we go through this process, you know, make those rules clear and in a way so that people feel real comfortable, absolutely, that's what we should all be doing, and make our other people safe and the Oregon citizens really feeling much better about how all of the people are doing their business in the open and public. We have done a great service to people in the state. So I look forward to it and appreciate having the opportunity to work with some really great people. This is a great committee with a lot of people that I've gotten to know in the last couple of years and appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Representative Hunt.
Thanks, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to serve with you and all my colleagues on this committee. I'm Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. I was actually thinking this morning when I was in college, it was my junior year, we had a big election scandal at my college, and these people stuffed the ballot box and tried and sway student elections. So the student government completely wiped out the old governing process and appointed a new elections commission and appointed me as chair and to basically come in and clean up the elections process, which was very reminiscent. Representative Thatcher and I, 2 years ago, had a similar experience where there was a little bit of a ethical challenge in the Capitol, and Speaker Menace at the time appointed a campaign finance reform committee, which we were privileged to serve on, again, to try and come in. And I think there are opportunities like that, and I think we're in another one now where there are those Kairos moments where you can actually have a real impact and make a real change, take advantage of a moment. I think we've got that on ethics issues, on rules issues, and on election reform. I've had a real real passion and commitment around some election reform issues during my whole time in the legislature. I'm privileged to serve on this committee to make some real progress on those this session. And really very much share Representative Roblin's view that this is a, looking down all the memberships of the committee, I happen to think this is the best committee membership in the building. So.
Hey. And on that note, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You know, Representative Buckley, I'm sitting to your far left. What is that?
I think it's mascot. I serve Kaiser, St. Paul, Newburgh, both Yamhill and Marion counties, and I work closely with the elections, especially with Jan Coleman, who is the, she's the political, or I don't know what her exact title is, but she, I'm helping her with some bills that the county clerks want to set forth. And I was also on the Elections and Rural Committee last session, was also serving on the Election Campaign Finance Reform Subcommittee, and that was lively and spirited and tedious and long and interesting all at the same time. And I look forward to serving on this committee and helping make all the processes that are of the subject matter of this committee, elections and ethics and rules, have all the integrity that they can have. And I look forward to the lively discussions I'm sure we are to have. Thank you.
Great, great. Well, I think it is really a wonderful committee. As Representative Hunt said, I think that it's a small committee, but it certainly is diverse and representative of some of the best and brightest minds in the legislature, and I'm very pleased that you all were willing to serve. I, as you know, I'm Diane Rosenbaum. I am beginning my fifth term in the legislature, and, you know, that's really a sign of how much the elections process can change in a state like Oregon, because when I began, that five terms would have been not a lot of time, but because of term limits, which we no longer have, I'm now one of the longest serving members of the House of Representatives. I have not had an opportunity to serve on the Elections and Rules Committee, but I can tell you that from my very freshman session, this was always one of my top choices of committees that I wanted to serve on, and that's because of some of the things that you've already talked about, that I believe that, you know, we are a nation of laws and that the rules of the House of Representatives really are one of the most important things that we have here. And so that aspect of this committee is very exciting to me, to be able to be the committee that we already had a mini version of this committee that met once about the adoption of our rules. But I think even more so to make sure that the rules are working well to honor public participation and fairness to all the members of the House. And so that's, I think, going to be an important role. But certainly what we will be starting off with is talking about the elections and ethics aspect of our charge. And already, as you know, the ethics topic has been a hot topic in the media, and I think that that will be one of the things that we spend a lot of time on. Our sister committees over on the Senate side, of which there are two, are already meeting. The Senate Rules Committee met yesterday and heard from the Oregon Law Commission. So I think we'll have the opportunity to work with the Law Commission, the Public Commission on the Legislature, the Government Standards and Practices Commission, as well as the Secretary of State's office, who we're about to hear from shortly, and then the county clerks as Representative Thatcher mentioned. I think that this session, you know, we obviously have set out to have a session that gets a lot done in a relatively short period of time. And so what I would ask you all is, if you have bills that you know are coming forward and coming to this committee, or should, that you make sure that myself and our committee administrator are aware of those and that we get them scheduled quickly, because I think this committee, as you know, will be one of the committees that still will be open toward the end of session, and things will get pretty hectic around here during that time. But I know already, because of the bills that have been referred to us and people that have come to see me, that we will be talking a lot about the initiative process. We'll certainly be talking about the elections process, which I think is one of the nation's models, really, here in Oregon, in terms of participation and a lack of real major scandals about it. But it always can be made to work better, and so I think we'll be hearing proposals in that vein. And then certainly revisions to Oregon's ethics laws and reporting requirements are, I think, initially going to be a big part of what we spend time on. So I am really excited about working with you all and getting the chance to chair this committee. I think that we'll have some of the most important legislation that this session gets to consider, and hopefully we'll be able to do that in a very cooperative and bipartisan way. There's a wealth of experience here at the dais, and I certainly am honored to be your chair. I also wanted to take this opportunity to introduce our staff, and I was very delighted when I learned that Jim Stembridge had agreed to serve as the committee administrator for our committee. He and I had a chance to work together on a committee in 2001, and I know that he's had a lot of experience in this area and is really one of the deans of the committee staff. So I'll let him just tell you a little bit about his background.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I started working with the state of Oregon in 1978, worked with four different state agencies. This is my sixth session as a committee staff, nonpartisan committee staff. Two sessions ago, I was privileged to work the Senate Rules Committee, so I have some experience in state government and legislature and rules. So.
Great, and we're glad to have you, and I believe you came out of retirement to assist us, and so...
I've been gone for 18 months, yes. I can't argue with that, yes. I was trying to figure out some way of supplementing my income during the interim, and that was the best thing I could come up with, was retiring. So.
Great. And I also want to welcome our committee assistant, Shauna Parker. Shauna, I believe, is new to the legislature. And Shauna, did you...
I'm new to the state, actually.
New to Oregon. Great.
I have a background. Bachelor's in political science, so I'm familiar with all of
it. Great. Well, welcome. We're glad to have you. So I think that we are now ready to hear from the Secretary of State, Bill Bradbury. That really is our only other order of business for this morning, is invited testimony from him. He agreed to be here this morning. And then just to remind you again, we will be meeting again at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and that's a hearing that's been posted with just one item of business, and that is a public hearing and work session on SCR1, which is basically the session retiming resolution. And so if you will please be prepared and be here on time. We do have a few witnesses that I know of, as well as that it's a public hearing, so people could show up and sign up. But we'll be hearing from one of the co-chairs of the Public Commission on the Legislature, Gary Wilhelms. And so I would love to have a full committee to hear from him and anybody else that shows up to testify. Okay, so let's stand at ease for a moment as we await the arrival of our Secretary of State.
There he is.
And here he is. Great. Well, when we, Jim and I put together the agenda for today, and we thought about what would be a good way to start off on our charge for this session, I thought nothing could be better than hearing from Oregon's Secretary of State to tell us a little about the elections process and any thoughts he has about what's good about it, what could be made to work a little better, and then just setting us on our way. And welcome Secretary of State Bill Bradbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can make this testimony really quick and tell you that I think the election system in Oregon is absolutely wonderful and it's a national model. Now, I have longer comments on it. It's a great place.
Get the camera.
It's a great pleasure to be here this morning. I really appreciate the invitation to come and testify before you. And I really do have good news to report about the vote-by-mail system in this state and the successful election that we just had. Once again, Oregon had some of the highest voter turnout in the nation. We projected a 71% turnout of the electorate of registered voters, and by the time all the votes were actually counted, that's exactly what we actually got. we were all a little bit surprised that actually the reality met the projection. It was really great. It's real clear that voters love the convenience and the ease of voting that vote by mail provides for them. It really, in addition, and all of you as candidates are clearly, having been candidates, are all very aware of this. The 2.5 week period that voters have their ballots in hand as they're deciding how to vote and what to vote on, it gives both candidates and campaigns a really extraordinary opportunity to reach out to their constituents and engage them in what I think all of us would agree is a very key civic duty, which is casting a ballot. And I really think that that's, in addition to the convenience of vote by mail, that's the other reason that we consistently have such high voter turnout, is because of this long period of time between when people get their ballots and when they have to be returned, and the opportunity for people to really reach out to people and get them to vote. I'm not really sure that anybody in this room, but some of my staff members, are aware of the reality that Oregon has really become a national leader because of our election system. And, you know, when we enacted vote by mail in 1998, the voters enacted it. People had comments at Secretary of State meetings nationally, cute, quirky, right? And it's very interesting because vote by mail has now emerged as the low-tech solution to fraud-free, technology-free, not technology-free, but technology-abuse-free elections. And it's pretty exciting what's going on. Washington State, our neighbor to the north, is already voting almost entirely by mail. And by the next presidential election in 2008, 38 out of the 39 counties in Washington will be voting by mail. Okay. 38 out of the 39 counties. Pierce County, Tacoma, is the only county that won't be voting by mail. In California, almost half of the state of California, actually 42%, voted by mail this past election through the using absentee ballots. The county clerks in Idaho and the Secretary of State, Ben Yasura, in Idaho, are advancing legislation this year for their state to move to vote by mail. And my elections director, who's here, John Lindback, has accepted an invitation from the Colorado legislature to brief them and Colorado's county clerks on how our vote-by-mail system works here in Oregon. So he's traveling at their expense to Colorado to talk to them at, what, in another week or so, John?
Monday.
Well, okay. So, and around the country, many states in this past election, I think as all of us are, you know, aware, found voters facing long lines at polling places or suffering problems with electronic voting systems. And there was sort of a combination of those two that really made voting difficult. On election day and afterwards, Oregon's system was being touted in media across the country as a system other states should consider to solve these issues. And we're very lucky to have our senior senator as introduced a bill with Barack Obama and John Kerry as co-sponsors that basically offers states a financial incentive to move to vote by mail. I wrote an opinion piece on the value of vote by mail that was published in the Washington Post and a whole bunch of other papers. Once the Washington Post had published it, a whole bunch of other papers around the country. And those guest opinions have really encouraged more debate around the country. Vote by mail is clearly becoming a national movement. There is a Adam Smith lives here in Portland, who runs the Vote by Mail project, which is not specifically associated with us as a government, but is a Vote by Mail project to both extend information about Vote by Mail and serve as an advocate for Vote by Mail all over the country. Very clear that one of the reasons Vote by Mail is getting so much attention is that it really does, in fact, answer many of the problems that high-tech voting systems have faced. I believe that our expertise with Vote by Mail gives Oregon a vital role to play in showing others how to protect their voting process. By sharing our experience, and we have a interesting opportunity this summer to share our experience because the National Association of Secretaries of State has their annual summer meeting in Portland this July, and we are the host, and we intend for that to be a major opportunity to, I won't say shove it down their throats, but just a major opportunity to really show the benefits of vote by mail. And I think by sharing our experience, I think there's another real benefit that comes from that. We can secure a future for our country where every voter knows why they need to stay involved in their government, because their vote counts. Their vote and their voice matters. And it's real clear that if voters lose that faith that their vote counts, in fact, we really lose our democracy and the greatest strength of our democracy. So we have the opportunity to help our fellow citizens, all Americans, really keep that faith that their vote does count and is counted. Because we were pioneers with vote by mail, and because we were able to get our centralized voter registration database, which is known by the acronym OCVR, up and working so well, we have valuable expertise to share on one of our most important responsibilities as elected officials, which is to ensure that every vote counts and that every vote gets counted. So technology has taken a lot of the blame in election system problems elsewhere. There is no reason that technology has to be the enemy. Here in Oregon, technology has really worked quite well for us. Now, I got to be real honest with you and tell you that when I first approached the project of creating a centralized voter registration database that the Help America Vote Act required us to do and actually pay for it as well, which was nice to have the federal mandate and the money, I have to say, though, as we approached that, all I could think of was the disastrous experience the Department of Motor Vehicles had gone through creating their computer database a number of years ago. So I was a little bit concerned. But I'm really, really happy to report that we, in fact, did it. And we were one of the first states to get our system, our centralized voter registration system, up and running. We used OCVR in the 2006 primary. It worked well, though there were some glitches in the operation of this new statewide database. But by the time we got to the general election, the glitches were worked out and the system performed very, very well. Our system has served as a model for 9 other states' voter registration systems, as they're instituting voter registration systems as well. And OCVR has been really an important tool in providing real security for our vote-by-mail system. It's given us the ability to verify quickly and accurately every single voter's signature on their ballot envelope against, and we compare that against their signature on their registration card. Every ballot. And we can check every one of them. It assures us, and it assures the county clerks, that no voter is registered in more than one county. which used to be a problem because we didn't have a centralized system. This has meant that our elections are really virtually fraud-free, and it's infinitely more secure than the so-called hybrid election systems that still use both polling places and absentee ballots. And that's, the hybrid systems are really one of the most troubling, where you have more fraud problems than you have with just 100% vote by mail system. Really protect against fraud. States running hybrid systems are also spending much more money to run their elections than Oregon does. Vote by mail has saved us about 30% in costs over the days when we were still using polling places and absentee ballots. That combination, polling places and absentee ballots, is the most expensive way you can possibly run an election. So I'm incredibly proud of our elections division and the great work that they've done in this area. And most recently, they've proven their technology prowess again by building a revolutionary campaign finance reporting system that's known as ORSTAR. And all of you are going to be very familiar with that very quickly. I have to say that I really applaud the legislature for really thinking pretty boldly and creatively by adopting in the last session the new continuous reporting system for disclosing campaign finance information to the public. The adoption of House Bill 3458 in 2005 in the last session directed the creation of a new web-based reporting system for political committees, and ORSTAR is the result of that very, very wise vision. Political committees can now file their financial transactions online more easily than ever before, and the public benefits, the public obviously gets a benefit because they have a truly searchable database of campaign finance information that is available to them on their home computer, their office computer, whatever computer they want to go on, as long as they can get on the internet. In a state where political contributions aren't limited, we owe the public as much transparency as possible. The ORSTAR system delivers that transparency, and we did, in fact, develop the ORSTAR system on time and on budget. So we're very pleased with that. Now, I want to say, like the first days of centralized voter registration, the ORSTAR system isn't yet perfect. We went through quite a shakedown process with Oregon Centralized Voter Registration, working with all the county clerks and getting it debugged and working it out. And the ORSTAR system is not yet perfect. And users of the system have helped us identify a few glitches, but we feel it's about 98% there. It's pretty well ready to run. And we look forward to your continued feedback and to having the opportunity to, in addition to getting feedback from you as you try to work with the system, we really look forward to familiarizing you with the system, and our staff would love to work with any of you if you need to have questions answered on the ORSTAR system. So centralized voter registration was developed into an incredible system through our partnership with the counties, and specifically the clerks, the county clerks in the counties, where we were able to constantly refine that system in response to their feedback. And we had quite a system to get feedback from the counties and work with them on problems. Likewise, it will take our partnership with you, the legislature, to have our new election business system and the ORSTAR system succeed. So I really would invite all of you to feed back to us on a continual basis until we get it just the way it's supposed to be. We're counting on you to help us find any remaining glitches that affect your work with the system and provide feedback to us on how we can, in addition to identifying technical issues, make improvements to the system over time so that it's better and better. I think that really brings the committee up to date with the latest news on Oregon elections since the last time we were in session. And I really believe we're in a very, very good place. We're national leaders in protecting our fundamental right to have our vote counted. We've also conquered key technologies that answer both the needs of busy 21st century voters with vote by mail and the needs of these voters to understand the financial aspects of political campaigns through the ORSTAR system. In a time where it's very easy to be cynical about politics, we in Oregon have been responsive to voters to try to prove that cynicism is wrong. I'm very, very proud to be the Secretary of State of the state of Oregon at really what I consider a very watershed moment for our citizens. And I thank every member of this committee for doing their part to help accomplish the success that we've had in implementing vote by mail, implementing OCVR, and now implementing a campaign finance disclosure system. And I think it's safe to say that Oregon voters thank you as well for your participation in that. So thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And that was certainly a great introduction to the topic of elections. And I know that we will be seeing much more of you, as well as of your very capable staff, some of whom are sitting in the back of the room.
Yes.
So thanks a lot for being here. So are there any questions from committee members? Representative Buckley.
Your staff kept straight faces the entire time, too. Mr. Secretary,
learned to do that.
can you let me know what the kind of timeline or the approach to rolling out ORSTAR is, or when are we going to be able to see it and get our hands on it?
It's online now. It's running. And so you can get signed on.
Just go right to that.
Go right now. Go to John. I want to make sure that
get the right address.
John.
You're supposed to be signed on 2 weeks ago.
Don't you
catch that?
You get an email. I might even get the email.
Name and Mr. Limbeck, would you identify yourself for the record?
I'm John Limbeck, Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. You go right to the Elections Division website, and there's a big logo on the front that says ORSTAR. And and if you want to, if you haven't registered yet, each of you need to register. And there's a process of registration where you go in and just sign up like you would if you were signing up at a website to buy something. And then we approve you. And then you go in and your committee, I presume all of you have open committees. Your committees are already loaded in there. There's a balance taken off your last report filed with our office. And then your committee is ready to do business in the campaign finance section. Now, what ORSTAR does is it does two things. It allows you to file a statement of organization or amend it. And then it allows you to file all of your campaign finance transactions. For people who have gone in and done it already, I would say their biggest challenges are the sign-up process, which has surprised me because I thought it would be the campaign finance part. but some of them have just had trouble getting into the system, and if you're having trouble, just call us. We'll lead you by the hand through it. We'll come to where you are if we have to. Our staff has worked very, very hard. I cannot tell you how stressful this project has been because it was layered on top of a very busy election year, layered on top of implementation of the centralized voter registration system. And we've taken some hits in certain corners of this building about this, and I think that's very sad because our staff, every one of them should receive personal thanks from everyone in this building for the amount of overtime and hard work that they have put into the system. Your committees have all been receiving memos from me. There is a section of the bill very wisely adopted by you 2 years ago that says that if there are any transition problems from the old system to the new one, that we are to use that as a mitigating circumstance in regards to levying any fines for people that it may have problems in the transition. We intend to be generous about that. For people that are having any transition problems, I haven't seen a single case so far where I would fine anyone, even though they may have been a day late, because of that mitigating circumstance. The problem was either a glitch that we hadn't seen in Orstar, or a problem on the part of a vendor that vendors that some of you use in making the transition to the new system. So it's going, in our view, extremely well, but we do, as the Secretary said, need your help. Any new system, you go on a shakedown cruise for a couple of months. And fortunately, that provision in the bill allows us to go on that shakedown cruise, and we're all dependent on your feedback to make it go well. So that's a long answer to your question. Just go to our webpage, and there's a big logo right there.
Quick follow, Madam Chair. Thank
follow
you.
Up?
Yeah. Thank you. I just wanted to say, first, obviously, my campaign committee has stopped talking to me months ago. I do want to just to say thank you. We knew when we set this in place 2 years ago what an incredibly ambitious project it was going to be, and the fact that you got it done on time, and the fact that it is going to do what was promised. When I've had town hall forums and talked to people about the availability, to simply to go online and check. If you want to know, you know, who is funding this person, their name's going to be right there. It's going to be at your fingertips. The response to that has been extremely positive, so I'm very grateful for the work that your office has done.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to have Mr. Lindbeck there to officially and publicly say it is working. What he knows is that during the Law Commission discussion, this Orstar system, if it really truly does work as advertised, has the possibility to add-ons to the reporting system that we're talking about in ethics and gifting and all kinds of other things. So there was much discussion there about, well, you know, if we had a web base, we could hang it on here and we could hang it on there. And I kept saying, let's let this train leave the station before we start adding cars to it. Because I was very skeptical that this train would ever leave the station, as Mr. Lindbeck knows. And I will tell you that I was trying to log on, was it 2 weeks ago, at about 9 in the morning, and couldn't log on and was on the phone immediately and informed that we're not going live till noon. So that's how fast. I'm shocked, Representative Buckley, that you were oblivious, because let me tell you something. I was right there. And actually, we were on afternoon, and the people that are working with it on my behalf have found the Secretary of State's office very receptive, and no glitches or bugs that have appeared, which for a rollout is unbelievable. And I do hope that you're absolutely right down the line. You never get through with no glitches. My experience, I guess maybe I was thinking of the DMV experience when in my skepticism. So if we can get these bugs out, I think there is the possibility to add more cars to this train. And I'm not going to be anxious to do it fast, because I really want this thing to work through some election cycles. But the possibility is there. And so, Mr. Lindbeck, congratulations.
Thank you.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question on the Oregon Centralized Voter Database that you were referring to earlier. You talked about how it cuts down on duplicate registrations from one county to another. I'm just wondering, how many did you find in setting this up, and what was your process for figuring out what was right, what's wrong?
You know, Representative Thatcher, I can't answer that question in terms of how many we found. We didn't actually try to count, but we did have the counties go through the process where each voter name was matched against the rest of the database, and where they did find possible duplicates, the counties communicated with each other about whether or not that was the same person, because sometimes it's difficult to tell. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people, believe it or not, out there with the same names, even same names and same birthdays. And so you have to, the counties are required to go through a lot of searching. And so there was a lot of communication going on between counties. And where they determined that a voter had more than one registration, there's a function in the OCVR system to merge that voter record so that the older record is merged into the newer one and that voter is registered, in fact, where they live now. There were no cases found as a result of OCVR, interestingly enough, where voters are registered in two places and actually voting in two places. Which I think was everybody's fear and is a legitimate fear and why we need a centralized voter registration system. But in terms of an actual count, I don't think we've ever done one. I would say, you know, the just a wild estimate on the possibility of possible duplicate registrations was probably, you know, in the hundreds. Or maybe even over the 1,000 mark. But as far as an exact number, I can't tell you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
One more, if I may.
Representative Buckley.
Ms. Sarah, it's a leap, but just one from Ohio and Florida, the two states that have had the most problems in recent. Are they interested at all in vote by mail? Have you had discussions with the Secretary of States of those states?
I have not had discussions with the Secretary of States. John, have you had any discussions with Florida or Ohio?
No, I have had inquiries from local elections officials in Florida from time to time. Our advice to other jurisdictions about vote by mail is pretty consistent in that if you make a wholesale change in how you vote, you want to do that very gradually. It would be unwise if you were a polling place state to sort of say, okay, we're going to go all vote by mail in the next election.
Right.
That's not the way Oregon did it. Oregon started on a small scale in the early 80s and sort of gradually built on that over 20 years, where the procedures and so on were refined over that period. So there are many states that are going to no excuse absentee as a way to transition towards vote by mail, and or doing vote by mail in small local elections or elections that don't have any candidates on it as a way of sort of gently stepping into the process. I believe Florida does a small amount of that. I don't think Ohio does any vote by mail right now.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to commend the system as well. Our clerk encouraged all of the candidates in the area to come and take a look at the system as it was going. And our whole staff went over. I was there with a couple other candidates who showed up from different positions and walked through the system, watched the verification of signatures on every ballot and every envelope, understood how the process works where they collect them all and leave them in those envelopes and put them aside, and then at a particular time, all of the different checks and balances we have put in place over that 20 years with people can come in and watch the process the whole time, and it is total. I mean, when you're done with a presentation by a clerk, I believe, you understand how clearly they take their obligation and how well-trained the people are in those ballot areas and how secure those ballots are kept. And then in the final analysis, how accurate that count is. You know, the dummy groups of ballots that they put through every time to make sure that the voting machine is counting properly. All of those safeguards that we have put in place should make every Oregonian feel very, very pleased that we have the system and that we have the people in place who really care about making it work correctly. And I was impressed, and I think all of the people who were there that particular day were truly impressed and realized that when this is all done, the votes counted are the votes that were supposed to be cast. And they answered every question. If there was any, you know, they talked about if they didn't understand how that, you know, that signature and that signature, well, they put it aside and they make sure that they make a contact and figure out, in fact, and if something has happened to that person, because we wanted to, you know, if a person had a stroke and their writing was differently, what's going to happen? And they said, well, that's one of those obvious ones we do. You know, we call up and we ask them to fill out a new card, put a new signature, then we have something to look at. So, I mean, everything seems to have been considered. Every question that was asked, they already had the answer. They'd already thought about it. So, again, I just want to commend the whole system for what they've done.
Representative Roblin, I will report to Coos County Clerk Terry Turry that she did a very good job.
Excellent job.
Showing you the election system.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a question on another topic, and there may not be anything to report on this, but there is an article, I think, on the front page of the Oregonian today about congressional projections, and that Oregon and Washington are both states that are projected to possibly pick up one more seat in Congress based on population. And I don't know how early this process starts or what your involvement is, but one of the things that was said in there was how important it was to make sure that if we care about this, that we're counting every person in the state. And I guess I didn't know that it was based on actual population, not population of citizens or voters or anything like that. So
it's basically really it comes to the Census Bureau. I mean, we don't count the number of citizens. We count the number of registered voters. And obviously it comes to the Census Bureau doing a – one would have presumed that changes in apportionment of representatives would take place after the next census. So everyone's speculating about where population growth is doing this and that. And, you know, but that would all take place after the next census.
And apparently the census, it's not a census of citizens. It's a census of people physically located in your state, regardless of their citizenship status, which was something I wasn't aware of. So this really, that's a process that goes on right now in terms of just looking ahead to the next census, and
right.
Not anything you would be involved in.
And we're the the Secretary of State's office has no role in congressional redistricting. I mean, the current law has us involved only if the legislature doesn't succeed in doing legislative redistricting, but we're not involved in congressional redistricting.
Right, right. And I believe there's a recommendation from the Public Commission on the legislature to change our method of redistricting and set up a bipartisan commission, as some other states do. So I'm sure when we hear from them, we will hear a lot about why they think that would be a good idea.
Right.
But it was certainly interesting, because if you look at the map that is shown in the paper, there aren't very many states that are even a possibility for adding seats in Congress, and so we're in a small group of those. Texas, obviously, is way at the top of that list.
Utah, I think. Did I read Utah as well?
I mean, there's a lot of growth in the West. Idaho has certainly been growing like leaps and bounds.
Right.
We have been, I mean, one would expect, I mean, it's, you know, the thing that's always so interesting to me about this is if we gain a congressman, somebody else loses a congressman. There's not a net gain of congressmen, congress people.
Right.
There's a winner and a loser in this little issue from now on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been that way for a long time.
Right. Okay, well, seeing no other questions, I thank you very much for coming to see us so early in the morning and early in the session, and we certainly hope to have you back many times to work together on your legislative proposals and others that you may have opinions about.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's been a real pleasure being here, and I'm sure that we will be, and John will be as well, back often with various issues that you will be considering. So we
Great.
Look forward to it.
We look forward to it, too. And having no other business to come before us, I'll just remind committee members that we will be meeting at 4 o'clock in Hearing Room F. And do we recess or do we adjourn?
Yes, well, you may go ahead and adjourn, because we have hosted a second meeting.
Okay. And we are adjourned.